In the late 1970s, cases of the sometimes fatal toxic shock syndrome started being reported in the medical literature. Although the clinical picture had been described decades earlier, something had changed, and by the early 1980s, the link was made to tampons. However, despite the obvious, germ theory was upheld by the establishment, and bacteria was named as the prime culprits. In this video, we'll investigate some of the key events that took place and why microbes are not to blame. It's clear that female sanitary products are big business, as are medical and pharmaceutical interventions involving the menstrual cycle. So carefully crafted narratives have been created to maintain these industries. And although toxic shock syndrome is rare, has the focus on this acted to cover up a host of other problems that result when one of the body's eliminatory mechanisms is interfered with? The good news is that all of these troubles can be easily avoided. Behind the microbe, there is to be sought the cause of the microbe, and this, in every case, is the state of the soil which permits him to flourish. Dr. Leonard Williams. According to a 2006 article in The Straight Dope, tampons go way back. The word tampon is probably derived from the old French word tampon, meaning a plug or cover for the muzzle of a cannon or gun to keep out dust and moisture. In her book, Everything You Must Know About Tampons, 1981, Nancy Friedman says, "There is evidence of tampon use throughout history in a multitude of cultures. The oldest printed medical document, Papyrus Ebers, refers to the use of soft papyrus tampons by Egyptian women in the 15th century BC. Roman women used wool tampons. Women in ancient Japan fashioned tampons out of paper, held them in place with a bandage, and changed them 10 to 12 times a day. Commercial tampons were probably available by the late 1920s or early 1930s, but they didn't gain mainstream acceptance until Tampax appeared on the market in 1936. Tampons became big business in the 20th century, and it is currently estimated that women in the United States spend around $1 billion per year on the products. Since the 1940s, companies such as Tampax have produced studies purporting to demonstrate the safety of tampons, and the reassurances have continued into the modern era. Although, as you will see in this 2023 journal publication titled The Safety Assessment of Tampons, there are just a few conflicts of interest involving Procter & Gamble, the owner of Tampax. The issue with declarations that tampons are safe depends on what is being looked at. For example, the aforementioned Procter & Gamble study reported favourable comfort ratings and few acute adverse events. They found that the vaginal microbiome was generally comparable with and without tampon use. The authors reported that each product is comprised mostly of large molecular weight components, cotton, rayon, polymers, that cannot pass the vaginal mucosa, are widely used across the industry, and replete with a vast body of safety data and a long history of safe use in the category. Quantitative risk assessment of all small molecular weight components assured a sufficient margin of safety supporting their use. We'll come back to this last claim, as a recent publication begs to differ. Earlier declarations of tampon safety came unstuck in the 1970s with Procter & Gamble's Rely tampon, a super absorbent product that could apparently absorb 20 times its own weight in fluid. In the late 1970s and early 1980s, around 45 million Rely tampon samples were sent out across the United States in a mailbox marketing blitz. Many women started using them, probably attracted by the apparent convenience of needing to perform less changes. Cases of toxic shock syndrome started being reported in 1978, but it was not initially realized that many of them were associated with tampon use. In September 1980, the CDC finally reported on the association of toxic shock syndrome with tampons, and the majority of cases being linked to Rely. What is quite surprising in this 1980 report is the CDC's statement that Whatever roles Staph aureus and tampons play in the development of toxic shock syndrome, certain preventive measures can be identified. Women can almost entirely eliminate their risk of toxic shock syndrome by not using tampons. I say surprising because that is almost an admission that tampons are the cause of the syndrome. However, they played the germ theory card in the final sentence where it states, CDC continues to recommend that women who have had an episode of TSS not use tampons at least until Staph aureus has been eradicated from the vagina. When you want to find out what the medical establishment currently wants to portray to the public, the online encyclopedia, Wikipedia, is a good place to start. The entry for toxic shock syndrome starts with the sentence, "Toxic shock syndrome is a condition caused by bacterial toxins. Symptoms may include fever, rash, skin peeling, and low blood pressure." There is a single citation for the claim that it is caused by bacterial toxins. This is a Critical Care Clinics article published in 2013 that costs US$24.95 to access for 24 hours. So what kind of pricey information is contained in this article titled Toxic Shock Syndrome, Major Advances in Pathogenesis, but Not Treatment? The paper starts with the claim that Staphylococcus aureus and Streptococcus pyogenes, group A streptococci, are gram-positive pathogens capable of producing a variety of bacterial exotoxins, including a family of toxins known as superantigens. Straight into germ theory claims regarding ubiquitous bacteria constantly on us and around us that apparently suddenly try to attack us sometimes. You can watch my videos, Why Pathogens Don't Exist and Strep A Superbug, to see why it is dubious to call these bacteria pathogens, because there is no evidence that they can attack healthy tissue and instigate disease. To be clear, we are not claiming that bacteria and other microbes do not produce toxic metabolic products at times when they are breaking down biological tissue and environmental toxins, but this does not mean they are the original cause of the problem. Humans also produce material that may be toxic to us. For example, imagine several people locked in a small bathroom with blocked toilets and blocked windows. After a couple of weeks, it would probably be looking and smelling like a very hazardous environment. The Critical Care article goes on to state that a syndrome of fever, myalgias, sore throat, edema, scarlatiniform rash, and desquamation associated with Staphylococcus aureus infection was first described in 1927 and in 1978 by Todd and colleagues, who coined the term Staphylococcal Toxic Shock Syndrome. By Stevens in 1980, young menstruating women using high absorbency tampons were identified as a high risk group, with cases also observed in men and non-menstruating women. The paper describes two overlapping syndromes, Staphylococcal Toxic Shock Syndrome and Streptococcal Toxic Shock-like Syndrome. We will not spend time on the details here, but the case definitions can be seen in Table 1. I'll also make some comments soon about how different causes of illness are conflated into these entities in order to fit germ theory. The paper goes on to state that the epidemiology of Group A strep diseases has changed dramatically over the course of the past few centuries. Historical literature describes epidemics of scarlet fever, which presented with fulminant sepsis and high mortality. Scarlet fever became less common in the industrialized world during the middle part of the 20th century, before the advent and availability of antibiotics, possibly because of improvements in living conditions, nutrition, or pathogenicity of circulating Group A strep strains. Well, the offer that improved living conditions were possibly responsible was rather understated, but at least it is admitted that it was nothing to do with antibiotics or vaccines. In the modern era, it is noted that a review of global data in 2005 estimated that 97% of the cases and deaths caused by invasive Group A strep disease occur in developing countries. The suggestion that it may have been due to the quote pathogenicity of circulating strains is clearly ridiculous and typical of the attempts to make all observations fit germ theory. Staphylococcal toxic shock syndrome is split into menstrual and non-menstrual illness, again brought under the same umbrella due to the allopathic theories of germ causation as well as the management protocols. However, this creates a smokescreen when it comes to what actually causes the syndrome. And keep in mind, the wider syndrome has largely non-specific features. Regarding the underlying claim that bacteria cause the problem, the critical care paper cites a 1982 publication with the title Toxin and Enzyme Characterization of Staphylococcus aureus Isolates from Patients with and Without Toxic Shock Syndrome. In this study, they obtained 19 vaginal samples from women diagnosed with toxic shock syndrome. All samples were found to have the presence of Staph aureus. For comparison, they tested vaginal samples from 95 menstruating women without toxic shock syndrome and cultured Staph aureus from 14 of them. They also tested samples from non-menstruating women and the nasal passages of healthy children, the latter returning 50% positives. Next, they tested all positive samples for the presence of pyrogenic exotoxin C, a protein that is produced by some strains of the bacteria. The results are presented in Table 2 of the paper. You can see that isolates of Staph aureus that produce exotoxin C were found in all 19 toxic shock syndrome cases, but they were also found in perfectly healthy people, albeit in a lesser proportion. And herein lies the complete nonsense of germ theory. The presence of the bacteria, even a particular strain of interest, is not the independent factor in the pathogenesis of this illness. This study, and all the studies we have reviewed over the years, do not show that microbes instigate disease. They simply respond to the underlying terrain. Something has to cause tissue compromise first, and then the bacteria kick into action. It is certainly possible that in some cases the byproducts of breaking down tissue will be toxic to the host. But that is like blaming firemen for causing some water damage to a building while they were dousing a fire. By its own design, the 1982 paper had no capacity to demonstrate Staph aureus as the cause of illness in the 19 women. And to be fair, the authors did use terms such as associated and may explain pathogenesis. But they certainly focused on the germs, and to explain their results concluded that in this study we found that persons without a history of toxic shock syndrome may be colonized with an organism potentially capable of inducing toxic shock syndrome and yet not develop the illness. The reality is the vaginas of millions of women are colonized with Staph aureus, even the so-called toxin-producing strains, and yet the vast majority of them are perfectly well. Germs are frequently associated with the disease process. They may produce or modify symptoms. Normally their function is beneficent, protective. Some are concerned with digestion. Others are scavengers, facilitating removal of waste. Disease germs are a product of disease and never, as the medical profession still blindly believes, its primary cause. Dr. Ulrich Williams, Terrain Therapy. Going after bacteria is a waste of time because it is downstream from the actual cause of the problem. Although toxic shock syndrome remains rare, it is clear that interventions such as tampons can precipitate a dangerous situation in the vagina, with toxic shock being at the extreme end. It is likely to be the tip of the iceberg, though, with many other milder diseases or long-term consequences associated with their use. As mentioned earlier, it all depends on what is being looked for. A study published in Environment International last month tested tampons for the presence of toxic metals and metalloids and found that they contained a full smorgasbord, including lead, arsenic, and cadmium. As the authors pointed out, this raises major concerns as there is no safe exposure level to substances such as lead. It was also noted that the vaginal epithelium absorbs chemicals efficiently and the usual detoxification mechanisms are bypassed, so they directly enter the systemic circulation via this route. In other words, putting substances into the vagina is a risky thing to do. Entire books have been dedicated to menstruation and its biological, psychological, cultural, medical, and commercial considerations. The whole situation has been twisted and overcomplicated, in large part due to the medico-pharmaceutical industry's involvement, as well as corporate entities convincing women to become long-term consumers of their products. Despite menstruation constituting a normal part of being a healthy female of childbearing age, young women are told that previous generations were in a mess, and it is only since the advent of modern products that the situation is tolerable. I would not advise the regular use of any tampons, synthetic or natural, or any devices that hold secretions in the vagina, as they interfere with the normal function of the female reproductive tract. The vagina has a vital role as an eliminatory organ, so it is unwise to block it up or hold any waste products inside. Related to this is the other technique of suppressing the normal menstrual cycle through hormonal contraceptive pharmaceuticals. While it may seem like an easy way to avoid periods, part of the eliminatory function is now lost. Some women even end up having hysterectomies to stop what is perceived as troublesome menstruation. But once again, this removes an important eliminatory organ. The consequences of these actions from the medical specialists, the pharmaceutical companies, and the corporations selling so-called feminine hygiene products may be very serious. However, they are unlikely to be motivated to investigate the matter, and due to their conflicts of interest, we are better off doing it ourselves. Earlier this year, our friend Dr. Andy Kaufman explained some of his research concerning toxins that are found in vaginal secretions and why normal menstruation is likely to have a protective effect for women.
So I found this study going back to 1975, and there aren't many studies like this, but here they actually did gas chromatography of vaginal secretions, and they were looking for biological compounds, but in this analysis, and they didn't really mention this in the body of the paper, but they found several chemicals, some of which I've highlighted here, which are not biological chemicals. They're not metabolic breakdown products or produced by bacteria that may grow inside the vaginal canal. So for example, ethylene glycol on the bottom left, which is highlighted, is antifreeze and not something found in biological organisms, yet it was found in vaginal secretions. Also, we have benzaldehyde and phenol and paracresol, which are industrial chemicals. So this was the first initial evidence of industrial chemicals being found in vaginal secretions. So I came across this next study, once again looking at PFAS, and it was a review paper, but in there it mentioned another study, and I will read the quote here because it's very significant. Menstruation is a route by which women eliminate PFAS, partially explaining why men have higher PFAS levels than women in the same communities. So this is what I was getting at with reverse causation, that women, because of menstruation, are able to detox from many of these substances. Now, this is something that is not a general interest in terms of showing how our bodies detoxify, but because they are looking at fertility, we have some of this data. And I did look at that study and I found some other studies that show that these substances do get excreted during menstruation. So this is a way to explain how potentially men have higher levels of these substances in their body because they're not menstruating. And this increases their risk of cardiovascular disease. Then after menopause, when women stop menstruating, then these substances accumulate in their body. And over time, their cardiovascular risk goes up to essentially match that of men.
So menstruating women can view the process as a good thing, and those that think their periods are too heavy can perhaps investigate underlying reasons why their body is trying to eliminate so much. In terms of monthly management, I personally found that period underwear is all that is required. Just make sure the brand uses fabric that is healthy and as natural as possible. And yes, I'm aware that there has been a class action lawsuit against NYX underwear, not a brand I've ever used, with allegations that noxious chemicals were detected in some of their menstrual lines. While the next case is concerning, the impact is certainly going to be less than if the substances were in tampons and touching the vaginal mucosa directly. In our most recent book, The Final Pandemic, one of the subchapters was titled Allopathic Medicine Invents Diseases, and there are elements of this theme at play here. Toxic shock syndrome has different causative factors that are brought into one apparent entity, with a couple of bacterial species then being blamed inappropriately as the instigators. One of these specific causes would be better named tampon shock syndrome, which, as originally noted by the CDC in 1980, is entirely avoidable. By its own design, the allopathic system is not going to accept that nature does not make mistakes. However, we can choose the right path with healthy thinking and healthy living, and there are loads of free resources at drsambailey.com where you can find out more.
If you enjoyed this video, please visit supportdrsam.com.